Today we have a very special episode of The Stand-Up. We have with us Luke from Linus Tech Tips. Say hi. All right, there he is right there.
I thought it was Luke Tech Tips. Was that right?
To not be confused with LTT, yeah. He has LTT. This is LTT, not LTT.
Oh, okay, different LTT. Got it.
Different LTT.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you.
Yeah. There's some other guy who no one knows who's like a co-host or something on that. The main channel, I think. I don't know. But Luke's the main dude.
Luke does the heavy lifting. All right. Thanks for the intro interruption. Anyways, sorry. Also with us is Teach and Casey
Niratori. I interrupt things.
Yep. Oh, whoops. Thank you. Yep. TJ, you're wearing a sweater that can no longer be bought. It must be very exclusive. Arch, by the way.
Arch forever!
TJ already has children, so it's okay. All right. Well, anyways, today we're going to be
Can I just say, though, you have to get married and have kids before you install. Otherwise, it's GG, boys. Your line, your family line is finished.
Okay.
Your ancestors are disappointed. They hunted and gathered for nothing. You ended the line just because of your operating system. Wait till you have kids before you start Arch. Thanks.
That's true.
That's just a PSA for today.
That's a good PSA. Honestly, I think more people need to hear that. All right. So today we're going to be talking about RAM prices, get some thoughts, where we think it's going, along with probably SSDs and some other things. Is there any other unknown costs coming in? And then after that, I'm going to probably ask Luke a little bit about running Linus Tech Tips, what it's like hiring people, all the good stuff. What does he kind of experience in today's age of AI and such, especially in the YouTube scene, just because it's a much different set of technology and how you develop stuff and kind of the software you run for. Very curious about all that stuff. So let's start off, obviously, with the maiden flagship topic, which is RAM prices. I don't know about you, but the moment I heard that AI loves RAM, the first thing I did is went out and bought MU, which is a stock, Micron, which exclusively does RAM. And guess what? It was my best investment I have ever made in my entire lifetime. There must be something there. If the stock market says there's something there, there must be a there. And so
number go up.
The number does go up. Now, there's only one person in this call that I know for a fact can not only build the PC, but also knows how to order a GPU from the internet, which is an impossible task these days. I have no idea how to order a GPU. So I figured that we'd bring Luke on, and he could kind of give us some of his thoughts about this whole RAM price debacle and where he kind of thinks it going, where he thinks it's kind of going. And maybe inform us uneducated non-GPU buyers about the hardware market.
The permanent underclass.
Permanent underclass right here.
Sure, yeah. I'm not surprised by certain moves like Micron's Crucial's. So Crucial is owned by Micron. Crucial stepped out of the RAM market. That was not too surprising. I think they've honestly wanted to do that for a long time. If you look at how, honestly, somewhat specifically, DDR5 was even designed, it was not designed from a consumer standpoint. It was designed from a enterprise standpoint. The goal has been enterprise for a long time. This is mostly a convenient and high profit exit from the consumer space for Crucial. And I don't personally suspect that prices are going to come down from supply being super high for a pretty considerable amount of time. It takes a really long time to get fabs online, and they are also going to resist the fall of the price because they want it to be high. Some of the like most collusion in effectively like any market anywhere has been in RAM. These companies love working together to price fix. They love working together to keep prices not too high, to not increase fab capacity too much. That's another thing that they do to, I don't know if you can say artificially or not. There you go. Nice.
I'm listening. I'm listening.
This is super well documented. If you're interested in it, there's been a lot of legal suits over it. It's not even a secret at this point, let alone an open secret. So you can, dive into it if you're interested.
Commish, you gotta listen to me.
Oh no, not one more comment from you. I'm done rebasing your mistakes. You're on junior CSS duty until further notice.
Commish, you can't do this to me.
Keep talking and you'll be doing stored procedures for a month. Now get out of here. Take him with you.
Fun fact, CSS is actually touring complete.
I
Larry Gary Tango Mary. I'm just pulling your request. It looks good to me. You're clear to ship.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Next.
It's an awfully big PR. For an intern.
Well, I just bumped some dependencies. It's nothing major.
Hey, can I get a quick stamp on this?
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Quick approval!
Oh, not on my watch.
I'm on your diff like a penis on Slurge.
Not this again. It's literally just a hex code change. Just approve it!
Just approve it! Squish, perf, resisting review. Oh, I know you're the diff where I've seen vibe coding, but that ain't it.
First up, no!
I hate Merge Cop. He always makes reviewing take forever. We have Code Rabbit. Oh, come on. I wasn't even merging the prod. It was a hex code change. We have Code Rabbit. We don't need real people reviewing such simple changes. Code Rabbit can do it for us. Our engineers' time is better spent solving problems for customers.
You can try it too at coderabbit.ai.
Next week on Merge Cop.
Now, my plan to merge a dip so big.
You're the dipper and I always knew it.
They have also worked together to, yeah, not increase fab capacity. Now, right now, there is enough demand that, yeah, they're looking into fabs. There's partnerships from at least one brand to work with a much smaller fab company to try to increase their capacity and throughput. There's one happening in Taiwan. But it's going to take a while for us to really see the benefits of that. I think the thing that might happen first, and I could be wrong here, is a slowing down of investment in data centers and a need for RAM. I don't see that coming anytime soon. I don't personally necessarily see a like massive market crash that some people are predicting for AI happening super soon, due to a lot of the companies that are really driving this forward being hugely profitable regardless of AI. But yeah. I guess that's my quick thoughts.
Quick question. You said that DDR5 was designed more for enterprise, less for consumer. I have no idea what that could possibly mean. Can you say a little bit more about that for me? Like, what does it have, like, parental controls or what? Like,
I also, just to be fair, I think DDR stands for Dance Dance Revolution. So, like, that's how much I know about RAM. So, I'm, like, I'm very far behind.
Number five. Sick. Yeah. I thought they'd have more editions out by now, but that makes sense.
It's a very popular game.
It is disappointing that they don't have more Dance Dance Revolution editions. There's a really good video from Wendell from Level One Techs. If you check out his YouTube channel and scroll down a bit, because it's not very new. Where is it? Hold on. Oh, it's not that old either. It's called Your DDR5 Memory Could Be at Risk, all about DDR5. 20 minutes long, deep diving. What the heck is going on with DDR5? I think it's interesting that he has that video about issues that we're fighting, especially in the consumer space, but definitely in the enterprise space with DDR5. And also, Linus Torvalds was on our channel not that long ago, and he was mentioning that he thinks a lot of the problems that users have with Windows is actually users with bad RAM, which was very interesting. And part of these two discussions, in my opinion, merged together because of one of the points that come from it being designed enterprise first is it's not really designed for what most of us have in our like desktop chassis, which is honestly not a ton of airflow, especially compared to a like server environment where you don't care about fan noise, you don't care about much, to be honest. You just want the performance and ideally low power draw, but that's all often an afterthought. So a lot of desktop DDR5 is like overheating or having various other problems, and Wendell and some of the Level One Techs forum crew and whatnot have designed these, like, I don't know if you were into desktops back in the like DDR3 Corsair Dominator era, where they had those metal fan brackets where you'd have those little tiny fans that would go over your RAM. Well, those might actually like matter now. And the community is making 3D printed shrouds for their RAM so that they can then mount like small, I think it's 80 millimeter, but it's been a while since I've looked into this, little tiny fans and point them directly at the RAM up close to get more airflow on there, and then they're getting less errors, less problems. Because if it's doing error correction, like, on the actual stick before it gets to the CPU, all that type of stuff, and it's overheating, that's not going to perform as well, and you might have more issues, is my, like, fairly not amazing understanding of what's going on there.
So, hold on. I just want to rewind that for a second. Mm-hmm. You were telling me that some of the Windows issues I have
Prime,
is not due
before
to
you
Windows.
Say that though. It's the stand up. Can you say we're going to circle back on that? That's a little bit more work appropriate. We don't rewind here.
Please, I don't want to boil the ocean right now. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
But okay, because I can't, my ability to maximize Windows decided to no longer work anymore, and so that's my life as a Windows user right now, is the ability to only have Windows one size. So that's RAM.
Yeah, that's all RAM. That's all RAM.
Yeah. What?
Probably not RAM.
Yeah.
This is crazy. I thought I was a good programmer.
Windows is just bad, okay?
Okay, yeah. Okay, fair.
There's only so much we can do. Yeah.
All right.
I do like Talk that, though. I like Microsoft coming out and saying, actually, what you guys need is little fans on your RAM. That's going to fix the Windows.
Come on,
not getting maximized.
Figure it out yourself. Yeah, no, I think it's more like crashes, blue screens, application crashes, application errors. If you look into stuff in event log and there's like things going wrong, it might be related to that. But it shouldn't be like a random function not working, like being able to full screen Windows.
Obviously,
Prime, have you asked Cortana and or Copilot to full screen it? It might work that way instead.
I actually haven't, but I am very curious about doing it. I did.
Please record it. I need to see the results.
Yesterday, I actually did give my first AI swing of like a application, and I noticed that Gemini has been added to all Google Chromes and Windows. So I was like, oh my gosh, I can't log into Frame.io. And so I want to delete this site's cookies. So I clicked on Gemini and said, delete this site's cookies. And it said, I can't do that. And that was like that's been my only experience thus far, which is very disappointing.
Yeah.
I just wanted the cookies gone. So then I had to go and ask Gemini on what's it called? On Google to give me the answer.
It truly is a futuristic AI then, though, because it's like it is denying your requests. That's what the end game is for AI, right? So they achieved it. They achieved it. Yeah, lore accurate for AI. Lore. So that's funny.
So we are like we're year one effectively into the great ramming.
Oh my god, that's a great title.
Thank you. I just made that up right now. But anyways, the great ramming's happening right now.
I love it.
How long do you think this can go before RAM prices level out? Because I was looking at it, and MU and Western Digital, which is SSDs, they are up 300% in their stock price. So, like, people are obviously pricing in what they think this, you know, this value is going to be. And it has not looked like it's slowing down at all on the stock market. Is this reflective of what RAM prices will be? Are we going to see a 3X cost? Aren't they already pretty much at that?
As per usual, this is not financial advice, but
of course,
man, is the stock market predictive of anything these days?
Yeah.
I mean, you had a good guess with investing in MU early, which is why you own the office building you're sitting in right now.
Thank you.
But it's like...
He's leasing, okay, Luke? Don't let him get ahead of himself.
I'm smart with my money, okay? I lease. Commercial real estate's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I think the demand and price is going to be high for a long time. I think that's one of the main things that I meant with my like little intro thing there, is that I don't think it's just going to randomly come down. I think for the last few years, we've been seeing a general all computer hardware shift towards enterprise. And when you do that and consumer becomes more and more of an afterthought, consumer gear is going to be more price performance expensive for what you're getting. We saw Intel recently talk about this, where they're like, Intel just openly was like, you know what? We've been giving the consumer market like too much attention. We're going to focus more on hyperscalers. We're not interested in that anymore. You're seeing Crucial step out of the market. You're seeing Nvidia like almost like begrudgingly still talk about GeForce cards. There's like these companies are seeing the bag that is working with enterprise. It was actually, I mean, even for me, like being in the hardware space predominantly, it was fascinating not that long ago to find out that like a lot of these water cooling companies that I thought of as these like scrappy little consumer water cooling brands sold the vast majority of their revenue of products through enterprise doing water cooling for servers and data centers. It's an interesting world, and there's a lot more money in it than like, us like waiting for deals on friggin' Newegg or whatever. It's a totally different thing when you're willing to buy like just some incredible amount of money worth of, like, if I don't know, some of these reservations for even during coin mining, some of these massive operations were buying pallets and pallets and pallets of GPUs, and if they had issues with them, kind of like almost shrugging it off. Whereas consumers, like, you know, if you have an issue with it, there's a Reddit thread with 7,000 upvotes and you're screaming from the mountains and all this kind of stuff. Like, why deal with us annoying low people who lack money when you can deal with the hyperscaler boys with all of the money and less of the problems? Yeah.
You know, it's funny you should say that, because if you have looked at OpenAI's kind of Ouroboros investing, NVIDIA has promised they're going to pay them a progressive amount up to $100 billion. And OpenAI's apparently one of their agreements, I was really trying to find out the exact number. And the only number I found was they're going to pay them back 10 gigawatts worth of purchases. And I was like, I don't know what that number means, because typically I use USD. I'm not used to whatever this AI money currency is. But a gigawatt, apparently, again, this is ChatGPT. I had to ask, like, what the hell's a gigawatt? What the hell's a gigawatt? And it said one nuclear power plant worth of energy. So I was just like, oh my gosh, that's how much they're going to be buying, is 10 nuclear power plants. And then I was like, did they make this deal elsewhere? And then apparently with Oracle, their $300 billion will also result in 6 gigawatts of data center, or 6 nuclear power. And then I was sitting there like, 16 nuclear power? Like, that's, first off, that sounds like a metal band. Second off, the United States has 39 total. Like, that's half. That's like 50% of the entire power grid worth of new nuclear power plants. And I'm probably not even saying nuclear correct.
So
it's nuclear.
Nuclear.
It's nuclear.
Nuclear. There's a lot of
nuclear. Yeah.
I don't know if you want me to inject some random technical stuff in here or not.
Yes, please.
Yes.
Certainly can. Okay, so I don't study any of this stuff. Like, hardware is definitely not my monkeys and not my zoo. I just look at it and go, like, look, the worse the hardware is, the better it is for people like me who like to talk about programming performance, because it just means you have to be better, right? So I'm fine with, like, great. If you have to start programming for a 10-year-old laptop, I'm happy about that. But
yeah, actually, true.
So, a typical data center, my understanding is that you're in the like 100 to 200 megawatt range for the data center. Like a typical modern data center, that's what you would be looking at for the total number of megawatts. Whereas AI data centers are like 10x that for power consumption. So when they're building those, they're looking at things like gigawatt, or, you know, like up to over 1 gigawatt worth of inflow of power to this data center, right? That's how much it consumes. So when they talk about gigawatts, they're literally talking about, like, okay, 10 gigawatts might be 5 data centers or something like that, 5 new data center buildouts worth or something like this, right? If I'm just like ballparking those numbers based on what I've seen. So when you think about that, when they're guaranteeing that kind of purchase, I mean, that's an ungodly number of GPUs, right? You know, think literally 5 data centers or something or more worth of these racks upon racks of NVIDIA Rubin, like, you know, slotted things or whatever, you know, they're on at that point. And so that's just, I mean, I don't know. We'd have to go break out a calculator to even try to figure out what kind of a outlay that is for NVIDIA, but it's massive, right? Like, it's a massive amount. Tying that back, though, to the thing we're actually talking about, which is memory, my understanding was that OpenAI actually signed some kind of nutso deal where they were going to buy up to 900,000 wafers a month of DDR memory.
What's a wafer, and how much memory is on a waif?
Okay. So again, not my monkeys, not my zoo. I'm doing my best.
It's classified, Prime. It's classified. Okay.
It is.
Yeah.
If you actually want to know the yield per wafer, like, they have the number of, like, bits per wafer. these are things you pay analyst firms to get. And they are constantly moving around because people are trying to increase their yield and so on. A wafer is a piece of silicon. It's circular. You've seen them.
Is that the circular one that we talk about?
Yep.
So they're just buying circles.
Yep.
They're buying discs.
You're buying the output of the circles.
Yeah.
Okay. I was about to say, I don't know how to take a circle and turn it into a stick. Like, that's very difficult.
Casey, I've never seen a GPU that's round, so I don't know if I believe this.
But there are some. There's people who make wafer scale. They're kind of prototypes, but they make wafer scale AI accelerators, and they are circular.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. But that's just nutso stuff. I mean,
they're designed after Sam Altman's orb.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's circular.
You can only
Technically... technically, Prime, you're more right. You were trying to make a joke, but you're more right than you think you are. I believe the OpenAI deal is literally for uncut wafers. They have been patterned, but they are uncut, and they are going to be like controlling where that gets shipped to and how it ends up getting stacked and packaged. Was that like the last time I read it, they were uncut patterned wafers, not cut and packaged, which is very unusual. I could be wrong,
Prime,
but that's
say it.
My recollection.
No, it sounds just, like you're right. I didn't actually realize.
I believe
that.
I am, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I'm thinking about a Sam Altman as Scarface right now.
Yep.
Just uncut wafers all over his desk. Yeah.
So, again, to give a really bad explanation, because I'm the wrong guy to give this explanation, you really want to get, like, you know, Dev Patel. Dylan Patel? Dylan Patel from Semi-Analysis or something? You want to get him. He would know, right?
It depends. Yeah, like we're more on the consumer side of things. Yeah. Like I don't get way into this too often. I do know that like the difficult part is making the wafer. Like there's somebody online who made their own stick of computer memory using chips they got from, you know, somebody else. So it's not crazy surprising that they bought just the wafers. I just thought they would, you know, cut to the chase and get them to actually hand them over like functioning sticks. But
sticks is the problem, right? Because they are using HBM. So
HBM,
so like
for us normies.
Okay, so this is again way out of my league.
You
but
and I both have to guess what HBM stands for.
Yeah, so what it is like, if you think about normally how memory works, right, it's on a stick, and you basically have these, the individual DRAM chips that have been fabricated are, like, on a line of the chip, and then the connection is the little pins it slots in, and that's how it's talking to the CPU. So if you think about it, you've got, like, essentially the CPU is on a package, the DDR is on a package, on a little thing. You've got those connections. They go through the PCB, right, your motherboard, and there's, like, some small number of connections connecting them, right? So there's, like, traces on the PCB that are going to drive over to those, like, you know, places you slot them in. So GDDR, right, which is the graphics DDR, not the kind you slot into your thing, right? So the kind that goes on a GPU is a little bit different. That one is like welded right on, like it's like soldered onto the motherboard and directly connected and closer. And the reason for that is it's basically the same kind of memory for all intents and purposes, as far as I know, but the signaling is much, much faster. So they drive the data rate up, total bandwidth, they drive up by increasing the speed at which it can transfer things back and forth. And so it has, like, basically higher quality physical signaling to get things back and forth. But otherwise, same basic idea as the kind you would slot into your motherboard. Otherwise, not a huge difference beyond that.
Some people were asking for visual representation. And okay. if you look up, if you wiki, I don't know if I can share my screen on this thing, but if you wiki high bandwidth memory, there is a very good photo. If you scroll down to the interface section, that shows how it's like 3D stacked as well.
We haven't gotten HBM yet.
Okay.
HBM is totally different than both of these. Totally different than these two things. So HBM is completely different from those two things. Completely different. it's the same sort of memory. Like, it's still, the idea is still that there's a capacitor and a transistor per cell of memory, like, so the actual thing you're fabbing is somewhat similar. But it's very different in two very important ways. One, like Luke just said, it's stacked. And in order to stack it, it needs to be manufactured with this sort of different kind of connectivity. It's got these things called TSVs, or through silicon vias. They're like these connections that go through the stacks so that you can kind of like have each stack is talking to the next stack, and they tunnel through, right? So it's wider, right? It's a wider, it's like the actual physical footprint for the same amount of memory is a little bit bigger because it's got to have space for this. The normal DRAM doesn't have to have those, right? Those TSVs. So that's a thing. But the much bigger thing, I mean, although that's obviously a slight difference there. The much bigger thing is the stacking and packaging is just a way harder problem. So first, you have to be able to stack them. And this reduces yield, apparently. I don't know the reasons why, but like...
Again, can you explain yield?
Oh, God.
I forget. Just like a quick like one-liner. Why do you not like...
Percentage of stuff coming out based on what you put in.
Like, the just because some of it's bad, it just comes out like broken. So they're just like, this wafer is broken, bro.
Or different levels of quality.
Yeah.
Yeah. Computer chips small, hard to make. We mess up times. Yeah. Sometimes bad. That's
okay. The answer is that's what I needed. Okay, thank you.
The answer is I don't know. Normally, when we talk about yield, I understood it fairly well from the old, like, what's the yield on a wafer? Because you figure you make a wafer, there are defects on the wafer. So you know, you imagine you're patterning this thing, and you've got defects. Some of the defects are maybe could be, you know, some kind of impurity or something went wrong. Or maybe when you're patterning, the light just hit something, or there was one little speck of dust in there or whatever. So you have certain things that didn't quite work as well as they should on this wafer. And so some number of the things that you put on the wafer are just going to fail. And so normally when you talk about yield, you talk about like, all right, if there's n number of defects on a wafer, we expect those to fall fairly randomly. Sometimes they're distributed differently, like more towards the outside than the center because of the way the reticles work or all these other sorts of things. Who knows? But so you only get a certain number of those chips, right? Only a certain number of them will work, or a certain number of them will perform better than others for certain reasons, all those sorts of things. And all that goes into what you call your yield, right? And binning. So binning is, right, the process where you say, like, some of these chips work better than others for whatever reasons, run at higher clock rates, things like that. Others are like, they literally don't work. There's a defect on them. We can't get it working at all. And yet others are designed to, like, have certain things constructively turned off. Think GPU, where it's like, okay, there's this many processing units on the GPU, and they're designed to have some of those fail and be turned off. Right. So it's like, okay, this just has less cores now and it gets slotted as a different thing, blah, blah, blah. That's the normal way that, like, I have heard yield talked about. For this, apparently, when you have to, like, grind down the silicon and, like, stack it on top of each other and all that. And I guess there's a separate yield loss that happens. It has nothing to do with whether the original chips were working or not, maybe. But then there's also the fact that I got the sense when I tried to look at this stuff, because I knew we were doing this podcast, so I was like, let me go see, like, what are they talking about with some of these memory things? And I wasn't really able to understand it, because I wasn't sure if what they were talking about was yield loss from we stack these wafers on top of each other and that process produces problems, or if what they were talking about is we can't test the memory prior to the stacking for some reason, let's say. I'm making that up. I don't know. And so when we stack eight things on top of each other, we just multiplied our total failure rate by eight, because if one of them's bad, they're all bad, right? Because the vias won't work or who knows what. So I don't know which of those are talking about, but what I've seen put out for numbers is when you're making one of these HBM modules, your yield rate is awful compared to normal. They said three times as much wafer space is required for the same amount of HBM memory as for regular DDR5 or something like that. So the same number of bits stored, if you're storing them in HBM, you required three times the input wafer size and patterning to get that out. And that's a huge yield. Like, that's massive, right? I mean, just think about that number. It means you're doing all the same work, but you end up with three times more chips for DDR5 if you were producing DDR5 as if you did HBM. Make sense?
Okay.
That does make sense.
So that sucks, right? That is really, really bad. And it means that the price of those things has to be much higher because you're doing a ton more work for each one. You're doing three times more work to get the same amount of bit storage. So if you want a gigabyte of HBM versus a gigabyte of just the random GDR or DDR that we're sticking in the computer, it's right.
Sorry.
Last thing,
and just M. Okay.
Just to finish this ridiculous tangent on how it works. So the thing about HBM is what I tried to get to at the beginning before we went into that yield thing, is it doesn't go outside the chip. It's not connected to the chip in this sort of way that we think of, like with GDDR that's like slot on the PCB or DRAM, which is slotted in. It's on the package. So the way that it works is you literally, you know, you think about, I don't know if you guys have ever seen like die shots of something like a modern AMD processor where there's chiplets, there's like little chiplets in there. So it's like you de-lid the processor, there's like two, you know, CPU dies and something on there, right? That's how HBM works. It's on the package. So the CPU and the memory are all together in one module. They're not things you plug in or put on a PCB. Does that make sense?
Is this like this could be way off, but some of the stuff with like Mac minis and all these, some of the new Macs stuff where they have like the unified memory, which is why a bunch of people are using them for running local LLM stuff, because they have this higher bandwidth connection to CPU that actually lets you run like local models at reasonable speeds. Is this related at all? I don't know. I'm just asking.
I'm not sure. I want to say that there may be. I thought there was a. I'm not sure. I don't want to say because not sure about that. I know that there are some like A series chips, I think, that use on chip memory, which is very different and super duper duper fast, way faster than even HBM. Mm. But that's a different thing, which we could go into later. But it's not relevant to a DRAM shortage at all. Yeah.
Yeah, they're expanding cache in a lot of ways, but like you said, that's not really related.
Yeah, it's a different type of. It's a completely different. It's SRAM. It's not even the same kind of. Yeah.
Can I ask a dumb question?
Yes, please.
I have been asking dumb questions the entire time because this stuff, like I said, not my monkeys, not my zoo. And you look into it and you're like, Jesus Christ! Like it's just like this huge morass of stuff where you're like, oh God, okay.
So, me, the consumer, I don't just want a wafer. I want it like nicely packaged and then have like little LEDs on top of it. And then I want NZXT or someone.
You do not
Starforge
want LEDs. You're not an LED.
Dude, I have LEDs right now, baby, with my little rims.
Oh, no.
It just like, you know, the whole nine yards, right? And that's me as a consumer. So why in the world, as a producer, would I ever sell to consumers ever for any reason if Samuel Jippity Altman is just like, give me the circles? I don't even want you to put LEDs on them. I just want the circles.
That's the short. You just described the shortage, bro. Yes.
Yeah, that's what's happening, right? You nailed it, Prime.
Good job.
Done.
Episode's over. We can all go home.
I mean,
we're like literally never going to get them back.
Crucial was the consumer, specifically consumer side of Micron, and they were just like, yeah, screw it. Why do I want to deal with you guys? I can just sell to the hyperscalers. There is, if you look at the amount of companies that are actually making wafers versus the amount of companies that are selling in you know, the most consumer side of things, the sticks of RAM, there's an incredible amount of companies selling sticks of RAM. There are very, very, very few actually making wafers. The hard part is the making of the wafers, not the making of the sticks. Or in the HBM sense, it continues to be hard the whole way through. We're specifically talking in this case about the sticks. You were talking about putting LEDs. You're not putting LEDs on HBM. So I'm talking about sticks.
But they're missing out.
They're missing out. Data centers
would
be so sick.
On them things that like, you know, primarily coolers that go on top of HBM or something like that. But that's probably what you might see. But
when Razer gets into the HBM market.
And yeah, there we go. I'm imagining when I get my ChatGPT subscription, there's an additional tier, and I get like a live video feed into the data center, and I have like my rack, and it has my cool LEDs on it for an additional price. Like, they're missing out on these secondary effects that they could be selling, you know?
I like that. Yeah.
So that means the AI future always shows these data centers that are like glowing with bright lights. So Sam's not going for that style of LED future. He's going for like the dark, scary one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And we don't need light where we're going. Okay. That's pretty interesting. So is there any computer part that's protected from this AI revolution? Like, is there anything that's going to remain normal priced, or am I just screwed? Cause I have to buy a new computer here soon. I should probably buy it sooner than later, as it seems like. But also, is there like anything that's going to be cheap, or is it all gone?
Well, I mean, one kind of sort of nice thing is that the whole RAM situation is sort of creating this nice bottleneck. So it's unclear, how much CPU prices would be affected long term, because TSMC. There is a way in which the production capacity for things like CPUs is implicated by this, but I don't fully know to what extent. So when you do these HBM modules, the stack that we were talking about, the bottom of that stack is not memory. So the things that are like up the whole way, that's memory. But the bottom is actually a logic die. So it's kind of like one logic layer and then a bunch of like memory cell layers. And that bottom die supposedly is actually like an advanced process, logic process. So my understanding is that TSMC actually is going to be fabbing a lot of like the, for HBM4 or something, they're actually going to be fabbing the bottom layer. So it's like TSMC fabs the bottom layer of the stack, SK Hynix, Micron, and Samsung, if their stuff ever works, will be fabbing the other layers, and then they get like packaged together and then stuck on the COWOS packaging thing or whatever they're going to be using at that point. And so I suppose that could have some negative consequences in that adds more stress to the TSMC side, but I don't know like to what extent that competes with things like, you know, the logic dies for CPUs and stuff. So it seems like if you're sitting around waiting for memory all the time because you're memory supply constrained, then that would mean that like the fab processes that are used for CPU and GPU dies that aren't the parts that aren't the memory, that part seems like it wouldn't necessarily go up, right? Because they just have extra capacity at that point, because you can't make new accelerators without the memory, and you need a lot of that memory, and they just don't have the fab capacity. So that could be. Someone out there has done that analysis, but again, it's probably something you have to pay for the research.
Yeah, there's a lot of analysts. I think, like, theoretically, pretty much everything could be impacted to a certain degree. Like, if we're building all this stuff, basically everything in a consumer computer, those brands, a lot of them, not all of them, are also in the hyperscaler space. But the amount of impact on, like, a company that makes, server chassis and desktop computer cases is going to be effectively nothing, because you can scale it up no problem. And there's a lot of potential manufacturing in that space, so it's just kind of whatever. The amount of things impacted is going to be like a computer fan, for example. They might have lots of fans, but who cares? You can make tons of fans all the time, basically everywhere. There's not really going to be any actual real impact there. So it'll probably stay mostly with the things on or attached to or very close to the board. Which is mostly impact that we've already seen, but I do agree. I think it's bottlenecked.
Casey, so are you saying, since we have to pay a lot of money for memory and our CPUs are just going to be waiting all the time, JavaScript is so back?
Is that like, which CPU doesn't even matter? We're just waiting around. We're just waiting around. It doesn't even matter how long it takes anymore. It's just chilling out in memory.
Or other way around, you'll only be able to, like, new machines will only have 512 megabytes of memory because that's all you'll be able to afford. Like, each year, the memory will go down and down and down until eventually you're running, like, the Commodore 64 is, like, roughly what you get. You 64K. That's all you plebs can afford.
I've trained.
Normies are not allowed to use graphical.
You don't get a gigabyte. You don't get a gigabyte of memory. What are you talking? What do you think you're? Yeah. You know, some kind of the president or something. You don't get a gigabyte.
Yeah. Maybe maybe Bill Gates' old fake quote was actually right, but it wasn't right because it's most of what we need. It'll be right because it's most of what we can actually get.
Yeah, it's like that's what you get.
I like this.
The full circle.
640K will be enough. For anybody, because it is all you will get. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So the follow up question.
You'll own almost nothing and be happy.
All right. So the follow up question, I think, is pretty interesting because Google Stadia, obviously, they killed Google Stadia. Mm-hmm. Netflix actually went into this whole idea of doing games on the server, and they're doing it quite successfully. A lot of these places, it kind of seems like we're moving more and more to the server. Does this mean that within the next 5 years, we could see something along the lines where consumers are getting so priced out that it's better just to rent your workstation? It's better just to rent your time on some sort of server computer? Because I know there's a lot of this being pushed with like VS Code and GitHub and everything where you can just you rent out your development environment as opposed to you actually owning your development environment. You're just like, I can program anywhere now on any, you know, I just need a terminal and boom, you're up and running. And so, is this like a future that we're kind of forcing people into being like, oh, you want a computer? Brother, that's $20,000. Like, you better just go rent one for life.
I think there's some desire there from a variety of companies. But I think when we're looking at least some of the comms that I'm seeing from these like RAM wafer companies and stuff like that, is that they want to scale up because of this. Like, they would like both markets. I don't know. I mean, there's a Twitch chatter mentioning Chinese manufacturers covering to the memory market. Like, there, we might also start seeing competition like that. I wouldn't be too surprised if the gap between what the enterprise has available to them and what the consumers have available to them, or at least what the consumers reasonably have available to them, continues widening. For a while there, unless you're looking at like, what was that? The name of that CPU, like Knight's Able or whatever. Unless you're looking at like the extreme end of server specific compute hardware, consumers were pretty interested in that stuff for a long time. And now we have GPUs that are just mind blowingly expensive and CPUs that are mind blowingly expensive on the extreme high end. That just in a lot of cases, while those things are relevant, isn't going to be super necessary on the consumer side of things. Yeah, I don't think that's necessarily going to happen because there will always be a section of the market where someone could make money selling to those people. And I think the Chinese who are both getting into CPU, not both, but all getting into CPU, memory, GPU, all that type of stuff, they might come for that market. Someone else might, not sure. But yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
CXMT is supposedly not far behind modern memory standards like right now, and so they're kind of predicted to be able to ship at least like DDR4 style memory, right, or something like this. So they're not, Chinese memory manufacturers aren't like way behind, and so it's very possible that, especially if you start talking about, well, you know, no one can afford DDR5, so you know, maybe you could ship a cheaper thing or a less good thing, and that would be fine. Right,
and maybe you're not able to buy as high performant computers or relatively as now or whatever, but maybe Casey's stuff gets more popular and programming goes more you know, efficiency and performance and stuff like that. We start making Roller Coaster Tycoon again.
There we go.
It
really
is
actually like
the consumer desktop is just like gone, or consumer compute, I should say.
I was going to say, it's actually really this whole kind of crunch on everything and not being able to buy the next greatest MacBook Pro every single 6 months from the Silicon Valley. It is actually kind of a positive thing because people might actually start experiencing the crap they make on devices that aren't the premium of the premium. But follow-up question, which is, when Do you think this is going to hit phones soon? Because I kind of realize like people buy phones fairly frequently in America.
Mm-hmm.
Like at what point does Verizon say, yeah, sorry, we're not giving you a phone with a 2-year contract anymore. It's just like too damn expensive now. Like, is there a world where this is coming soon? Because I assume all those parts are equally susceptible to whatever's happening. The ramming.
Yeah.
It would make sense that it would. I haven't really seen it happen yet. You've seen it in a lot of other worlds. I don't know if that's because like they have contracts far enough out that it hasn't really impacted their available stock at this time. So I don't know when that would happen, but it would absolutely make sense to me that it would.
There's also like supposedly, and this is kind of, I don't know to what extent they're talking about this, but I guess the AI build-out doesn't only affect DRAM, it also affects, like, NAND flash storage and things like this. Like, apparently, like, you know, these machines that they're prepping, I don't know what a typical AI data center machine looks like, but it's not like, oh, it just has high bandwidth memory. It also has DDR5, regular, and it also has NAND flash, like SSD, so they're taking capacity for all of those things. And I think the memory side is what we talk about probably most, because that HBM stuff has such the bad yield stuff and all that stuff, probably like that hit first. But the other sort of storage technologies are also just facing limited supply for the same reason. Like AI just wants to buy a lot of it, and there wasn't enough slack like to pick that up. So I would imagine that phones will have all of these same problems. Like they'll, in a year or two when they're when their allotments have run out, they will be like, oh, crap, like the flash storage is more expensive. The memory is more expensive. About the only thing that won't get more expensive probably is that SRAM part that's on chip memory, like in a Bionic, like in a Apple A series chip or whatever. Right. But they, you know, that's just part of their memory architecture. They still have the other parts. So they're still going to have problems with that.
Yeah.
The Western Digital, which does a lot of, I assume that NAND flash, they're also up just an absurd amount in the last 6 months. They're up 300%+. just today, they're up over 10%. Like they're obvious. Sure. They actually have risen faster than Micron as far as
that was because of the podcast, by the way.
Huh?
That's because of the podcast, by the way.
I know. I know. We got some motion. all right. Well, I mean. This could be a good time to kind of jump off some of the hardware stuff, unless if Luke, you have anything else you want to talk about, because I do have some questions about YouTube and tech and all that kind of stuff for you as well.
Can I make two stupid jokes before we go to the next one? Because I had some. But I just didn't get a chance to put them in. People were saying smart things. When we were talking about yield, I really wanted to ask Luke what his thoughts were about roundabouts.
That's pretty good.
I like roundabouts.
Okay, cool. Nice. Yeah, that didn't go as well as I thought.
You only have to yield.
Gonna.
You don't have
yield
to.
You have to yield at them instead of stop. That's.
I mean, if you're just confident enough, you don't.
No, I love roundabouts personally. That's a great point.
Self-driving cars, baby. They just just do the thing. It's fine.
You know, my experience, people stop for me. Hey,
stop done.
That's just because you put the LTT thing on the side and it's coming through.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to be able to focus for the rest of the episode. Okay, I was just in my head, the roundabout joke mostly. So you had to be there. Yeah.
Yeah.
You had to be there.
Well, it looks like we all got to be there. That was very fantastic. Yeah. Thanks.
Okay. Prime, ask your next question. That'd be sweet.
All right. We should shift a little bit of gears and talk more about kind of LTT, because you guys obviously have some developers on board and all that, and you're doing. I assume the tech and the things that you're building is much different experience than, say, something like Netflix, where they've just been working on one product and ancillary products for 20 years, or Google, 20 years, right? Like, all these companies have been just working on the thing they're doing. Well, Google kills a bunch of projects, too, but imagine a company that doesn't kill a bunch of things. They've been doing one thing, and that's it. I kind of like, even though AI's had there's a lot of negative impacts to things, how has it impacted kind of this hiring, what work looks like? Do you guys feel like you're doing more things? Like the positives, the negatives? I'm curious.
I don't feel like it's changed. Like, I don't know. Hiring has gotten really weird. Hiring has gotten extremely strange. I mean, being like as public as we are, I guess, the hiring has always been a little bit odd. I've always been fairly open to hiring remote devs. So even like, I don't know, 6 years ago, putting up a position for remote dev would get 2,000 applicants. And a lot of them are, you know, people who are not prepared and are just like, I want to put in an application. I'll mop your floors. I don't care. Blah, 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 blah. Yep. It's like, okay, but I actually just need an experienced developer. I'm sorry. Like, I don't know.
The camera pans around and there's like 13 people mopping this one tiny piece of floor. It's like, guys, we don't need any more.
I'm wondering, come on. So you can sift through a lot of them pretty fast, but like it has really taken, like, I think especially over the last year, the influx of what are like obviously just garbage, like crapped out AI written, AI submitted applications has gotten crazy. And then sifting through that, it was already difficult because we had so many applicants for certain positions. If it's like hyper local and specialized, we don't get that many. Canada doesn't have all that many people. And then this area is quite expensive to live in. So it's a little bit, you know, if it's a local position, it's not that much. If it's global, it's a ton. But yeah, sifting through them, trying to find the stuff that's actually real has gotten more difficult. And the temptation to like counter sorts basically by, okay, well, you're spamming me with AI applications, let me sort through it with AI, is high. But then the error rate there would suck if you lose someone who's really good because they got AI sifted out. That would be very unfortunate. So there's some tension there. We have a coding test that we do for incoming applicants of every type of developer that we've hired, which is a decent range. We've had to make different ones, but they're made in-house. And we've ran that coding test in a bunch of different models to try to see what that output looks like. And we try to kind of detect how hard someone leaned on it. I don't personally care. Like, if you look at the coding test and you get AI assistance and you make the best result out of everyone, I think you made the result out of everyone. It doesn't really matter to me too much, but there is a little bit of sussing that I want to do to figure out, like, did you just take its output and just slap it in and not even, in Tej's situation, review it properly? Did you just throw it through? And if that's true, then, you know, I'm not that interested because even if it did one shot super effectively, I'm concerned about your ability to maintain things and keep them good over time. So yeah, hiring has definitely changed. It was difficult and now it's way harder.
Nice. So I've been reliably informed by Sam Altman that the problems of AI will in fact be solved by AI. And so you're telling me that you aren't solving your AI problems with AI?
No, yeah, not so much, not right now. You know, we'll see if that happens eventually, but I kind of doubt it. There's the basically inherent error rate, and for certain things, that's frustrating to deal with.
All right, so I actually do want to ask a real question here, which is that, so I think
What were all the other questions?
Fake questions.
Those are all fake. Those
you didn't care about the answers to those.
Get riled up and go on an epic 10-minute questions. Rant.
Oh, God. Yeah. All right.
Get wrecked, by the way. I think the obvious elephant now in the room, and I'm sure a lot of people would appreciate this in the audience, which is, okay, I am stuck in effectively ELO hell, right? Like, you're playing League of Legends, except for it's with your career and you're a junior, and you're trying to figure out how to get out of ELO hell because everybody is just dogpiling in and quitting mid-game. So how do I stand out, at least in your process, without giving away too many things, because then the AI will be like, got it. But like, how would you make yourself stand out in a sense that when reviewing, you go, oh, this is actually really good?
The application, I guess, is how I'll take this instead of the code.
I assume the application is the beginning of ELO hell, right? That's the bronze level right there.
Yeah, that's how I took that.
Would it be possible, just for those of us who aren't that familiar with it, also, what exactly, like, what kind of people are you trying to hire exactly? These are primarily programmers, and programmers for what kind of stuff?
Fairly surprising to most people, variety of things. So we have multiple websites. Okay. So we have floatplane.com, which is the first, like, thing that we made, which is a like Patreon-esque, but video first, you know, creator support platform where people can upload videos, have their own channel, and get direct funding from fans. We also have LTTLabs.com, which is where a lot of our, I don't even know if I can say a lot, some of our testing data from our local testing lab gets put up on there, and you can do comparison runs and all these other types of things, which is kind of neat. Then we have, somebody in chat pointed out, LTT Store. That one's a lot more basic because it's on top of Shopify. It's not just like our own thing. But then we have tied that in with like a system that we have, which is currently called Merch Messages, but it might be renamed, where if we are on a live stream and you are buying something on the store, well, as you're checking out, you can leave a message, and that message will go to the stream to be, go to a stream dashboard. So it can be curated and then selected, and then the producer can just respond to them in line, and then they'll show up in like the lower third banner at the bottom, or they can curate them, and then Linus or myself or whoever's hosting the stream can respond to them directly through like voice.
Gotcha.
So we have that tie-in. We have a couple other things like that. Floatplane and the LTT store link together for like exclusive sales and blah, 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 blah. That's most of our web development. We also have internal tools development, which ranges through a bunch of things. We've done a bunch of, you know, internal development on top of Snipit for inventory stuff. We wrote a GUI for Whisper back in the day because our editors didn't like doing command line stuff. We helped automate things around the office, just little things like that. And then the lab itself also has a pile of developers that work on like data ingest, both for handling data from, well, it's entirely for handling data from like benchmarking and testing of computer components, but then also making sure that like the website receives the right stuff and not the embargoed things and whatnot. Right. And also making a variety of benchmarking tools. Like Markbench is the name of one of the tools that we have, which does a bunch of automations for testing hardware. So like you put a new graphics card on a test bench, you run Markbench. Markbench will kind of try to verify that everything is set up correctly and then automatically go through, run all the benchmarks. It'll set up the game, make sure the settings are correct, scroll through the settings and take screenshots. So that if something is strange, if we're looking at the results, we're like, this result seems really weird, we can go back through and check, okay, was G-Sync enabled on the computer? Right. It's a fairly common, you know, when you're trying to test things, error vector. Is this random setting in the game wrong? Like, is this a game where we had to manually select the settings and the person clicked beside the dropdown instead of on it, so it didn't actually select the thing that they wanted, or whatever else? Because the most frustrating thing is like, okay, we have 5 days to like fully test this suite of new graphics cards. We're on day 4. Everything is done. We notice this one result is super weird. Why?
Right.
Because yep. Like, is it that one result is super weird, or is it all the other ones are super weird and this one result is the real one? Yep. So being able to go through and figure out, like dive through all the information to figure out, make sure everything's all correct is super valuable. We also do some amount of like AI checking to verify results. We only use that as an early warning system. So that's running as test results are coming in based on our expectations. And that will try to tell us if it thinks something is wrong early, but that hasn't removed any human checks to verify all the data as well. So we have developers working on that too. So we have a fair bit of range of people that we're hiring in the development space. And you asked what stands out. For me, it's the same thing personally. It's the same thing that has kind of always stood out. My focal point keeps moving. Sorry about that. I changed my camera setup last night. Very smart. But it's been portfolio stuff for me always. Like my first major specifically developer hire was very, very largely off of portfolio. They had no post-secondary experience at all. They had no work experience, but their portfolio was just insane. And I gave them a way too difficult project. We've drawn this back a lot since back then, but we gave them a way too difficult take-home project, and they just nailed it. I am evil for this. But my first like take-home project was make a game. and submit it. And I had some more detail than that, but it was brutal. It was very brutal. And he made a it was actually really fun going through those submissions. It was very fun. But it was if I remember correctly, it was I attempted to tone it down so it wasn't like way too
triple
crazy.
A game. 1 million in sales. Yeah. No, call us back.
It was supposed to be web-based. I think it was supposed to be aim on. Oh man.
Roughly it's GTA been, 6 level of complexity.
Buddy. I know.
Yeah, you know, if you have wanted levels in GTA, you really didn't try hard enough.
Yeah.
Well, I don't remember the exact details, but it was web-based, and there was like some stuff that tried to keep it relatively relaxed, but my God, that was way too crazy of a scope. So that never happened again. But he made a competitive asteroids game, and he set up a little bot that set off an alarm in his house when I joined the lobby. So I like loaded the website and joined the lobby, and it like went off, and he ran to his computer and they like fought against me, and there was chat in the sidebar, so we like talked about the game, and I was just like, this is insane, this has to be the guy, this is crazy.
I love the alarm. That is so brilliant of him to actually create a physical alarm. Like, that alone is like, okay, yeah, you're hired. That's a great move.
The whole thing is just nuts. And, like, I already knew from his portfolio that I was, like, very sold on this person. And then that happened. I was just like, oh, my God. So
you already knew, and then you said, go make a game? I mean, look.
I've changed. I've reformed.
Is he aware of this, Luke? Wild. Did you?
Is he about to get a new lore drop when this thing comes out? Is gonna be like, really?
Yeah.
Do you? So I mean, strictly out of curiosity, do you pay well? Can we poach this guy? Sounds pretty good.
I'm not gonna disclose who it was.
Damn.
We're not. Right. Yeah. We try to do what we can. We're not super competitive with. It's tough, man. The YouTube space is very different than like Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
If people want to like really really push and be in like hyper competitive environments, there's more money out there.
I was joking.
It's just I've been
also seriously. What's his name?
But also, if you happen to tell me who it was, I might pass.
But
him
also,
along.
I have a game studio.
We're good.
I might pass him along to some people. I'm not saying that.
He's still on our team. I'm happy about that.
Mm-hmm. Nice. All right. So, it's a question I really am actually very curious about, which is I don't know how to explain this. I sent TJ a frantic message last night, and I've just been feeling it for months on end about this, which is I feel a change coming in the specifically more in the tech YouTube space, but I don't know what that change is, but I know it's happening.
Wait, what?
Which people consume content, what their expectations of what content should look like, all of those things coming in. I just feel like there's a change coming, but I just don't know what it is. More in the tech space, just because there's a big influx of people. I think there's – who knows what's going to happen? And so I'm actually very curious on your thoughts, and really, I mean, I don't know how much of the T you can spill on LTT, but if you do, I think the second T does stand for T, but if – like, what is your guys' thoughts about this next year or these next 2 years? Is it business as usual, or do you think that there is, like, some pivots you may have to make or changes you have to make to remain more competitive?
Yeah, I can talk pretty openly about that. One question that I'll throw back at you real quick is that I often hear the software dev space referred to as tech YouTube because of you guys talking about being in tech. For
tech YouTube.
Tech YouTube is usually like hardware stuff. So when you're talking about the change you're feeling in tech YouTube, are you talking more on the like development side or the like consumer electronics and server stuff and whatnot side?
I would say either or, honestly, because I think there is something is going to happen here in this space that's just going to kind of change maybe how people consume information. I'm not really sure yet.
Yeah, I mean, I can talk about some of the like history of LTT and the change that we are still going through, which has been kind of from the beginning. So when Linus and I first started working together, we were part of a computer shop up in Canada called NCIX. We would show up to like a filming day, and in the studio, in a corner, would just be a mountain of products. Like the logistics guys would just throw them in the corner. And they would literally like pile up, sometimes up like to near the top of the windows. Like it was a lot. And we could just like old school Linus Tech Tips videos and even some of the old school NCIX Tech videos were just like, okay, pull something out of the mountain, talk about it while taking it out of the box, end video upload. And back then, we've kind of retroactively defined that as like product-driven video, where there was so much product, it was coming out so often, you're getting a new major graphics card launch every 9 months, something like that. You could really just lean on the products are interesting, let's talk about the products, let's show you the products, and that is your content. Around 2015-ish, maybe, we started having these conversations internally about, like, we kind of have to make the story now. That's when we started filming things like Scrapyard Wars, which is like a series. Scrapyard Wars is like 2013, I think. But we kind of saw the writing on the wall a little bit early. But that Scrapyard Wars is a series where you have a fixed budget and you go and you try to buy used hardware and you compete against each other to who can have the better system. And that was us trying to, like, okay, let's create a story. Let's create an interesting thing instead of the interesting thing being the name and the title that is the new product that's coming.
Was that shift driven by necessity, or was that just you guys saying we could expand, or were you saying, like, no, we're like, the products aren't that interesting anymore, or there's too many people doing this? Like, why did you decide to do that?
Yeah, it's a good question. It was definitely both. We were detecting a wider release cadence and kind of less interesting product releases. Both of those things kind of happening at the same time. And also, you know, this is our full-time thing now. Originally, when we were part of NCX, I was going to school. Linus had a job as a product manager, or a guy who buys product. I don't remember what his
official title. That's a little different than a product manager.
Yeah.
At least on tech YouTube, it is.
He would buy, like, SSDs and sell them through the store or whatever.
Got it, yeah.
So this was our part-time thing, so there's only so much we could put into it, and unboxing stuff was, you know, approachable. Now, when we're doing this full time, that was probably the main starter for something like Scrapyard Wars, was like, oh, we have time, we could do this interesting thing. And we always wanted to promote, you can buy stuff used, you don't have to buy the super flashy things all the time. And it's been a little bit frustrating for us forever that, like, the 5090 video is going to get all of the views, and the card that people are actually buying is not going to get brain any of these at all, because people want to see we call it Lamborghini content. People want to see the big expensive Halo products. And from there, they'll go like, well, this card is really interesting, therefore I want NVIDIA. And then they'll go buy the thing that they can actually afford. So we wanted to find a way to make it more entertaining to see content that is about not just blowing your wallet on everything. So that was the main reason for that. But then the reason why we really continued doing it, not only did it get a ton of views, but was because there wasn't a lot of other content we could as easily make. GPU timelines, for example.
Yeah.
I said 9 months. That was around when I first started doing content. Now it's like 2 years. So that has been a sliding scale the whole time. And also I find the releases are getting a lot less interesting. Like when the 8800 series GPUs came out, like, oh, God. The like performance expansion that happened was mind blowing. And then now it's like, well, you're paying 50% more dollar and you're getting 50% more performance. Hooray. Yeah, exactly. So it's like, it's not nearly as interesting. So now we have to try to, create stories, do weird projects, do stuff like that. And the competitiveness of it, maybe a bit. Linus, like, notoriously just, like, doesn't watch YouTube of almost any form. Seeing what other people are doing and then doing
Prime
is not so much of a thing. He'll read comments on videos, but, like, doesn't really watch them, which has gotten him in trouble a couple of times. I watch a lot of YouTube, but, I don't think, like, what other creators in the tech space are doing has really driven a lot of what we do. There are plans for the future. We want to resurrect some channels that we have on hiatus. We want to start making more videos again. But a lot of it's like, man, if the products aren't there, we're going to have to make something. That just is what it is. And if you're trying to release, like, if we want to get back to, say, 6 videos a week, for example, which is what we did for a decade, the vast majority of those are going to have to be not, you know, new product review. Maybe it's product focused, but not new product review type videos, because there just isn't enough interesting stuff.
Very good. Sorry, I was just thinking about it.
Waiting for a response.
I know.
Did he like the answer? Did he hate it? I don't know. I can't tell.
The
mustache did not move. It stayed completely stationary.
I identified with Linus quite a bit, because I too notoriously have been known for not watching YouTube.
True.
It is a thing that
I like watching YouTube. I can relate a lot to you, Luke. I can relate a lot.
Yeah, I know. TJ's my Luke.
There you go. Yeah. Nice.
Also, the important one in the group too. Okay. That's interesting. I was just curious about it, just because there's so much content now that's getting pumped out, and things are even like, you know, the so much jippity content that's getting put out right now that's even getting millions of views, which is crazy that people are just watching I don't watch YouTube, so what am I saying? Why am I even saying it's crazy, right? Good for them. They're getting all that kind of stuff. But I wonder, like, how that changes people, their perception, how, like, they're going to interact with videos. Does it need to be a nonstop flow of factoids? Is it going to be – how does it optimize? What is it going to be like? Is you're going to see something? I don't know. I was just very curious about how you guys are going to approach that, especially more in – you're not tech YouTube, obviously. You're hardware YouTube. Tech YouTube.
I agree.
You guys might define tech
YouTube
differently, but
I think we're tech YouTube. Yeah. No, it's. I mean, it's interesting, right? Like, YouTube, in my opinion, is trending towards extremes. We've talked about this a little bit publicly, where we feel like YouTube channels like the Mr. Beast of the world are doing super well. The NFL channel on YouTube, those types of things, are doing extremely well. And then smaller, more specified niche channels are also doing really well, because, and this does kind of make sense to me, because if you think about what viewers would go for, they're either going for the most, like, kind of brain turn off, absorb fun thing content, or they want to, like, learn about something and really, really dive into something. And we've traditionally kind of floated in the middle, which on YouTube was pretty good for a long time. And is getting a little bit less good now. So that's kind of informing some of our choices. Like I mentioned, we're looking into resurrecting some channels. And there is some planning going on of, like, trying to have channels that are more specialized. LTT has always been a generalist channel. Linus will review a phone, and then he'll make a 7 gamers, 1 CPU computer. It's a huge range of stuff, right? And that's just less rewarded in the current YouTube ecosystem. We're also finding that channel momentum is less important now than it's, like, almost ever been, which is a very weird space, a very uncertain space to be in, where, like, back in the day, if you did, like, we would go to CES, Consumer Electronics Show, we'd release 30 videos, and they would all do a little bit worse than normal because we're just flooding the channel, and the impact of that would be lower views for a while, and we'd see our view curve kind of go up over time because we're kind of recovering that that kind of base. And these days that doesn't happen, which is good and also really terrifying. It's good because if you release one bad video, it's not going to negatively affect your future videos as much, but it's really bad because the predictability of how well your videos are going to perform, thus your ability to, you know, have sponsors and all these other types of things, be confident in your, like, product, which is your ability to release videos, is going to go down. It makes monetization less reliable. It makes big companies like ours a little bit more sketched out because, you know, we have 120 mouths to feed. So if the ad rev or whatever slips because we have a few videos in a row that don't do super well, that can impact us a lot, which is, again, one of those reasons why I want to get back to more video releases, because if you release once every 2 weeks and it really doesn't hit and it performs really, really terribly, that impact on you is going to be really high. If you're releasing all the time, it can hopefully come out in the wash, but it's difficult to release that much content effectively. We have a big team of editors, we have a big team of writers, but as we get away from product review focused content, the content is harder to make. You have to dive deeper into things, you have to come up with better ideas, you have to come up with ideas that take a lot of work. etc. So it's, yeah, we're trying to scale towards that, but it's a tough problem. YouTube's always been that way, though. The landscape is constantly changing. What the algorithm mm-hmm. favors is constantly changing. And if you want to survive, you have to kind of ride that wave. So it is what it is.
Great. Yeah, it is interesting. Yeah, I think, like, you just sort of see now on the, like, the momentum for a channel doesn't matter as much. Like, sometimes you just put out a really good video and it just does really well. And it's like, which is awesome and, like you're saying, terrifying, because you're like, yeah. Okay, well, it's really hard to predict what next week videos are going to do, right, in terms of, like, what's going to happen next. But it is fun because it does feel a lot of times like when you know a video is going to be good, it does, like, hit well, which is fun, which makes the game pretty fun to do. I don't know. Prime, I feel like yesterday, though, I'll just say as well, you were just reading too much Anthropic blogs, bro. Stop.
Dude, I read through
what
Dario has to say. Oh my gosh. I'm a big time mirror, and so if I hang out with people that are really sad, I feel more sad. And if I hang out with people that are more like happy, I become more happy. I like hanging out with TJ. He's always smiling, and it makes me always smile too. It's also why I like hanging out with Twitch chat. They tend to be
they're
a lot
like
of kecked
golden
W's,
retrievers.
And
the look on Luke's face right there. Oh my god!
And so it's very, very exciting. I'm just a simple farmer, right? But but
it's
I started
much,
reading Dario's
work,
blog,
you know?
And then it's just I'm sitting there thinking, man, like also it's just like I just got blackpilled so hard for like 30 minutes of my life there, and I was just like, dang, man, this Dario guy, he walked. I just now I have a whole new opinion about everything. But
that's okay. I sent him a happy message afterwards, and he was right back, boys.
I just needed a little upgrade. Anyways, yeah, sorry. The AI stuff got me down hard last night, but now I'm back. We're so back.
To jump back to the spiky views topic for a second, this section of our channel I find very interesting. If you go to our channel, go to video, scroll down a little bit, and you see the Steam Machine Won't Cost What You Think video from 2 months ago.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That got 2.8 million views. Mm. The next video got 547,000. Mm-hmm. So, like, boom, it slammed down.
Right.
And then the next one got 848. The next one got 5.3 million. The next one got 1.6. The next one got 900,000. It's just like, whoa. Like, it really, really depends on just how the audience resonated with that video. And there's some informing of the algorithm for your channel and what type of content you make and who they might first seed it to and all that type of stuff. Like, there is some influence there. It's not that there's no momentum, but dang, yeah, it's really a very different world these days.
I think they picked the wrong year to release the Steam Machine if they want to put any RAM in it. I think is that, like, to tie it back to our original topic, it's gonna have like 256k. It's gonna be like, here's the Steam Machine, guys. It's $500,
sell, like,
no memory.
A bring your own
really
RAM edition.
I'm really hoping that they already have their allotment.
Maybe they have.
I have no idea, I've really been hoping that's true. Because I want it to do well. I think,
me too.
Like,
yes,
I
me too.
I suspect everyone in here is at least a little bit Linux-pilled. And it would be nice to have like a quite mainstream product like that.
Yes.
I think Steam Deck has done like immeasurable good for the like year of the Linux desktop movement.
Absolutely.
Yes, it produced PewDiePie, which PewDiePie produced a Linux video, and that's
huge. That was massive.
Glorious SSH.
but I think Steam Machine can only move that forward, so hopefully it's good, hopefully it's affordable. We'll see.
We're actually doing a conference this year about Year of the Linux Desktop. I can't say any more live because there's some details still getting closed, but it's pretty exciting.
Cool. Nice.
Yeah.
All right.
Right, Brian, I'm wearing this.
I don't want to say anything more. We got to be quiet.
No, I'm hoping that you leak and then I can yell at you.
You'll be like, gosh, dang it. Why did you say this explicit thing right here that I'm now repeating? I'm not going to do it. All right. Well, Luke, thanks for joining us on this. This was an awesome stand-up. Learned a lot. Very curious about the behind-the-scenes, especially with Linus Tech Tips. I also think it's pretty cool to hear that what we've kind of been preaching for a very, very long time on this channel, which is like building and actually creating things and learning how to have fun with tech, really goes a long way. Because obviously the first hire, that man must have had a lot of fun with tech. To be able to be like, I'm going to hook up an alarm. I'm going to put in live chat. I'm going to play like – thinking through things and having a good time just goes to show how valuable it has been and probably will continue to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Heck yeah. So awesome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, really appreciate it. Thank you, Casey, for joining us as always. And Teej, I love the sweater.
Chat, don't let Dario get you down.
Don't let Dario get you down.
AI think for you and have Dario get his earworms deep into your brain. Use the tools to keep on bettering your own life. Don't let Dario make you believe that you have to be a little Matrix guy hooked up to Claude and that's the only way to live your life. Don't do that.
It's true. That's true. Also, you can't be hooked up to Claude like C-L-A-W-D because then you'll get copyright striked or trademark infringed. But you have to be hooked up to the other Claude.
How dare someone use a likeness of a name for an AI company? Sorry.
It still is
tilting me that they were like, you used a name like our name. I'm like, bro, you guys stole the internet. Like,
let him have
the name Claude, guys. It wasn't even spelled the same. Whatever. Sorry.
Oh, it's beautiful. All right, well, we do really appreciate you. We really appreciate what Linus Tech Tips does, and so thank you very much for coming on. And we should, by the way, next stand up, we should talk about trademark, because I'm actually curious, because Microsoft, that was a real thing. That sounds the same. So there's precedent in
soft.
Yeah, there's precedent in the trademark.
We've always
world.
Had a precedent. What? No.
Thanks, DJ.
I missed the earlier two. I had to make one more shot.
All right, so I've had a joke that's been dangling around in my head because you were talking about how like these people were like off getting wafers and how there's these three big companies really controlling the supply of it. And so then I was going to make some sort of like jeweler joke. Like, are they the exact same thing as like blood diamonds? Is that what RAM is, except for it's mined by these three companies and they don't let anybody else have them? Is that how price controlling works?
You're talking about the cartel aspect of it?
Yeah, yeah. They're like full-on cartels,
I mean, maybe a better example would be the Canadian maple syrup cartel, right? Where they're all like, here's the price of maple syrup.
If you want a weird rabbit hole, look up the Great Canadian Maple Syrup Heist.
Yes.
That's
highly
fun,
recommended.
So we do this thing where on a lot of the stand-ups, we do full-on presentations where one person PowerPoint. Has to come in with slides, and we go really hard on the presentation. So, Luke, if you are interested, you can give a presentation on the Great Canadian Maple Syrup Heist, and that would go hard.
I can give people some rabbit holes to go down because I'm not ready on that one, but there are some. We have one of the coolest wars of all time, in my opinion. Canada was at war with Denmark until like a few years ago.
What?
Like a Cold War? Like with Denmark? It's like
it was like
Casey. Just because like they don't have war, summer the same anything, way as you,
I think it was very special. So there's an island off the coast of Canada. Go away, Denmark. which was contested for a long time.
Greenland.
And realistically, no one actually cared about the island itself. What they cared about was the ocean around it, effectively the fishing rights, the oil rights, whatever. Right. And that was the dispute. So we were at active war, but as like a Canadian active duty military member, you could go to Denmark and tour one of their military facilities, and they'd be happy to have you.
More
strange. Yeah, and so at the island, I might get some of this slightly wrong, doing top ahead, but. There was like a bit of a divot in the rocks, and there was a rock that could go over it. And the Canadians would put Canadian whiskey in there and plant a Canadian flag. And then every once in a while, the people from Denmark would come by in a warship, deboard, take the Canadian flag off, put a Danish flag down, and put schnapps in and take the whiskey and then take off. And they would literally even sometimes like let us know they were coming just so we didn't like freak out.
So you didn't have an actual war.
we're chilling. If I remember correctly, there was one time where it was like supposed to kind of be theirs for a while, but someone shipwrecked on the island, and we were like, "Yo, we're not gonna like take your flag us up, but can we go get the guy?" And they're like, "Yeah, no problem." It was genuinely. I actually really liked that we were at war with Denmark, and I was sad when they ended it, but they did end it relatively recently.
Who ended up with the island?
I think America's buying Greenland. I think that's where the moral of the story is going.
Yeah, maybe that's it. If I remember correctly, they like split it in half or something, which is so boring.
After all that. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
They just decided to share?
Yeah, it's so lame. Let's see. Yeah, it ended in June 14th, 2022. Resolve the issue resulting in the creation of a land border on the island. Yeah, boring.
Joint custody. So who gets it during Christmas? Like that's a real question.
Yeah.
They should have just done it on different days of the week. Like, okay, Canada, you guys get weekends and holidays.
That would be kind of fun. Yeah. Yeah, I have a lot of random Canada facts. Like, are you aware of a... Let me make sure this is even true.
No, don't check. Real. Don't check. Say it first. Say, it, first.
Say
it first.
Okay, I'll say it first. I'll say it first. As far as my understanding goes, you know moose? Masses and
herd of the terrifying.
Primary predators of a moose, which you can imagine there wouldn't be that many, is killer whales.
That's awesome.
Are the moose on like ice or something?
My understanding as to why, and again, I didn't just look it up, so part of this is probably wrong. My understanding as to why is they have huge lungs and they can dive. So when they're way up north and they're going from island to island, they can swim and they'll dive to eat like vegetation.
This has to be a lie. I like literally refuse.
And then this killer whale comes along and is just like, whoa.
Luke, I thought you were going to say the killer whales had really big lungs, so they just hop up on land and grab one.
And walk around, yeah.
Let me see. There's a Forbes article. I don't want to use the AI overview. I don't want to feed them. Orcas are a predator of moose, apparently.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess it's like they live for a long time, right? To be a big predator of moose or meese, as they say. Like, you don't have to kill that many to be, like, a top predator, probably, right?
There really aren't that many, yeah.
Yeah.
On their Wikipedia page, such as moose swimming between islands off the northwest coast of North America. Yeah. Wow. And they eat moose.
That's so cool.
Fun can of that. There aren't that many of them.
That's pretty good. Yeah, you got a few. The capital of Saskatchewan, what is it?
Nobody knows.
Okay. That was a friendship test. That's it. The stand-up is ending. Hey, if you enjoy watching the stand-up, you can enjoy it all you want on YouTube. There's a lot of this side banter, such as this Canadian fun fact area. That will be on Spotify, because it turns out people on YouTube don't like to watch people talk about fun Canadian facts for 20 minutes. This is just life on YouTube. So if you want the whole thing, go to Spotify.
We have the data.
We have the data. We know
it's
for
conclusive.
So if you want to enjoy the whole episode, go to Spotify for all the extras. But the main story, of course, is always on YouTube. Thanks so much for joining us, Luke. Thank you so much. Is there anywhere special people can find you?
The internet. Linus Tech Tips.
Great point.
WAN show in general. I'm around. Yeah.
All right. Awesome. And of course, Tej and Casey, thank you very much for joining us. Thank you, everybody, for watching. That is the stand-up. We don't really have like a sign-off line.
Yeah.
I'll try and get better jokes next time. Sorry, Chad. I missed a few this time.
Hey, no blockers. Galactus. Love Galactus. Bye-bye.
Boot up the day. Vibe coding. Errors on my screen. Terminal coffee. And hair.